Brennan.
Hello, Alan.
How's it going?
It's going well, good. As per usual.
Yay, usual. And we're back on our normal recording day and all that kind of good stuff.
Yes, it just feels right.
It does feel better on Tuesdays to record. For those listening to us not on Tuesdays, I guess people just listen to us whatever day they listen to us.
I don't think anyone listens on Tuesday that we record because we don't release it. I guess we do release it, but it's so late that I don't think people are staying up. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Well, you know, anyone that's in Hawaii, that it's still Tuesday on the day that we release it, right?
If you're in Hawaii, you should not be listening to a podcast. There are much more important things to be doing.
Oh. Well, maybe listen to a podcast, but maybe not on Tuesday.
Or if you are going to listen to a podcast in Hawaii, listen to ours.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. So we have a guest this week. I don't know if you know. Oh, you probably know. Actually, we don't need to like play around with too much. We do actually prepare for this show occasionally. So without too much further ado, let's introduce our guest.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yay. Our guest this week is Claire Clifton from glorious Colorado.
Yes, here in the Mile High State. It's very hot today, by the way. Mile High State at 100 degrees is not a thing.
What? Yeah, it didn't quite get to 80 here. It was supposed to be warm today, but it... wow, 100, that's hot.
It's really hot, and I made the huge mistake of deciding to go on a run at noon, which is like the worst thing ever, and ended up, without shame, lying down in a creek on my run.
You're a medical professional, are you not?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure.
I should know better.
It's like a smoking doctor.
Yes.
They used to prescribe like cigarettes for people for various ailments, right?
Well, they also used to prescribe leeches, but that doesn't mean it's right.
Well, leeches have come back, but cigarettes no.
Wait, leeches have come back? What's that?
Yeah, for some things they've been proved kind of helpful for helping wounds heal. It's still kind of on the fringe of normal medical science, but there has been a lot of good stuff. It like increases blood flow and reduces infection, and they'll put leeches on infected wounds and they'll eat only the infected tissue and not the living tissue, and that's incredibly beneficial. But yes, smoking, no. There has been no...
So smoking, not a thing. Leeches, maybe a thing?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've already gotten my admission price out of this show. I don't know about you. it's actually funny because one of the things I heard today, actually, on, I think it was Marketplace, was that e-cigarettes are now... well, I mean, they have been kind of a thing for a little while, but I guess what was that company that used to be called Philip Morris? Or no, that is the company, Philip Morris, and now it's something else. They, Altria or some other non-Philip Morris sounding name, just released an e-cigarette, and I guess RJ Reynolds did recently too. And I've seen people smoking them. I mean, it's not technically smoking because it's vapor, but I've seen that indoors. I've seen that just kind of rampant in parts of San Jose recently. What do you think of that? Because it's it is and it isn't smoking. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I've really only seen the billboards for it. I have not yet seen, like, e-cigarettes yet in public. I don't know. It's like, if you're gonna do that, why not just chew the gum? I would think. I mean, it's like less weird than smoking a plastic kind of. But I guess, I mean, as an alternative, nicotine is a, you know, worldwide renowned stimulant that on its own, I don't know. I don't think it should be a thing. I think if you really need nicotine that bad, like, chew the gum.
Yeah, there's a handful of people at my work who smoke them. And do everyone they do else it? Just smoke cigarettes.
Do they do it indoors?
No, they go out to the smoking area.
Okay, because I actually just... I just saw it happen when I was waiting at whatever that airport is in Denver, the Denver International Airport. While I was waiting for the plane, someone coming off the plane, like, you know, very deliberately, as soon as he stepped off the jetway, like, blows out his, you know, mouth or lung full of vapor, and it clearly looks like he's smoking. And you know, I guess technically he's not because there's no combustion, but it smells like smoke to me. So from my perspective, it's still effectively smoking. And I think from a bothering other people kind of standpoint, it's just as annoying. And actually, I don't mind. If you're going to put, like, crap in your body, fine. If you're going to put crap in my body just by being around me, that's not a thing. So
I totally agree. And I think it's, I mean, there's a lot of things I bet we'll see more and more e-cigarettes in Colorado as things kind of progress. There's definitely a lot more smoking in Colorado than there was in California. The whole anti-smoking movement thing seems to have, like, taken a little bit longer, I think, to hit mainstream. I don't know. I've just noticed a lot more smokers and a lot more smoke-related problems and illnesses with my job than I did in California. And I think that anything we can do to reduce that isn't, like, just like as a cultural option, I don't think that e-cigarettes are necessarily the way to go, because it's not that far of a leap from e-cigarettes to real cigarettes, and people still see you smoking and you're still bothering other people, and then it's, like, still culturally acceptable. And I think the more we can get away from smoking as a culturally acceptable thing, the better off we all are.
You'd think people at that altitude would smoke less.
Yes, you would. But there's a lot of Midwesterners here. I mean, not that all Midwesterners smoke, but, like, it does seem to be, like, from, like, I know when I go out east, there's still, like, smoking sections in restaurants and things. And even though there's not that here, there's a lot, like, higher prevalence of people who just haven't caught on that it's less and less of a thing.
Uh-huh. The smoking and non-smoking differentiation is total bullshit.
Yes, especially
like, whoever thought that up is a genius, because it's not.
But I'm old enough to remember when you used to be able to smoke on airplanes, and that was kind of ridiculous, the non-smoking section of an airplane.
I did hear those Wright brothers were big time smokers.
Like, even now when you check into a hotel and they ask you if you want a smoking or non-smoking room, that question takes me back every time.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Why would I want a smoking room?
That sounds terrible.
You get that lovely kind of yellowing wallpaper from the...
Hey, I can see inside the person's lungs who was staying in this room before me.
It's so gross.
Right.
Then when they try to bypass the smoking room as the non-smoking room, you can tell.
So, truth in advertising. Keep truth in advertising around.
Yes.
The other thing that I'd heard around that was that because e-cigarettes are not classified as cigarettes and smoking, you can have ads for them on TV. I guess not in California, because California is a little more strict about it, but in the story they were talking about, or they played an excerpt of an ad for one of the e-cigarettes, and what was really funny was they played an ad for a cigarette before they banned them from TV, and it's very similar. It's like, oh, the flavor of e-cigarettes. It's like, blah, blah. I'm like, oh. Yeah.
You know, Colorado must have much different advertising laws, because I've never seen an TV ad for e-cigarettes, but then again, I don't really watch a whole lot of live TV anymore, so I don't know if they're there or not, but there are billboards for that, for them, mm-hmm. everywhere. And same with, you know, we're an everything marijuana state now, but the, the amount of advertising they can get away with here for medical marijuana dispensaries is insane. Oh, like, you would think that we have, like, one on every other block based on how much you just see the advertisements and the billboards and the...
Wait, you don't?
maybe in Denver.
Yeah, the Metro, which is one of the, like, the free kind of Bay Area paper that's around here. It's like kind of entertainment news. I would say a good maybe fifth of the paper in the back is all medical marijuana dispensaries. And it's kind of, I guess it's a, you know, emerging market. so good for them for jumping on that kind of capitalism wise. But it does seem like that will eventually settle down once it, I mean, there is such a thing as market saturation, and I think we're coming close to it in California. I mean, it's new and improved over in Colorado, so we'll see.
Yes, it'll be very. I mean, there's still, you know, we signed marijuana legally into law a couple months ago, but there's a lot of things that still have yet to be decided about how they're going to regulate, and there's a lot of debate on how they're going to regulate the advertising of medical marijuana shops, and or not medical, that's already here, but, you know, recreational marijuana, and that there's a lot of pros and cons for, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting debate, and then it's also at the same time dreadfully dull, because it's the same thing gets brought up over and over again, and it's pretty much people who don't want to smoke weed don't want anyone else to smoke weed. Mm-hmm. And so they come up with a lot of, I think, like, distracting arguments, which all boil down to the fact that they just don't want it legal in the first place, rather than trying to find solutions now that it is going to be, or it is legal.
So. I personally like the, won't anyone think of the children kind of angle.
Oh, yeah. Some, I guess we should probably mention, I'm a paramedic, which is why we are talking about a lot of things medical. but one of the doctors who works at the children's hospital here just got nationally recognized for doing some study on children ingesting marijuana. But even when you look at the numbers he came up with, they're like minusculely small. It's like, come on, people. But what if you think of the children aspect? Although kind of valid, maybe not as much attention as we're currently giving it to in this state.
Sure. It's certainly sensational, and that's...
Yes.
That sells papers, you know, as it were.
No Instead one sells of, papers, Alan. The newsprint media industry is dead. Everyone knows that.
Well, it's funny, right? We were just talking about how, you know, newsprint is dead, and you mentioned that you don't watch a lot of TV. Is that, and I'm only asking this as the senior member of the Not a Thing podcast. does anyone watch TV, live TV anymore? Is that still a thing?
I try not to as much as possible. It's infuriating having to watch commercials for me. I've lost the ability. I'll go do something else and wait for my DVR to catch up.
I 100% think that that is eventually going to be a struggling market if it's not already. I mean, people at my work watch TV, you know, live all the time, but mostly it's the news, which is misery. because there's only so much news that occurs in a 24-hour
period. Yeah, there's maybe two stories that are actual stories, yes. And then another 23 hours and 40 minutes of filler.
I mean, even our local NPR, they start replaying, you know? Like, it's like if you've sat in traffic long enough that you've heard the whole thing of All Things Considered, it does start over. And I can't imagine that people listen to that over and over again, but people watch the news all day long, and it's the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, I'm wondering what is, because I guess I'm still okay with kind of leaving a TV on. Although I think it's only on days when I have absolutely nothing happening. So usually like a weird Sunday kind of afternoon or like in the absolute middle of the night and I can't sleep, I'll have a TV on and it'll be kind of with commercials and everything. But what is the, and this may be too futurist of a question to ask, but what is the way to sell stuff, or what is the way to have TV when, you know, it's so on demand?
Cable. paying for content.
So moving away from just traditionally, you know, over the air free TV.
Yeah.
Because I think there is still a value in having kind of locally created stuff. I mean, with the, like, for example, when there is a kind of a national level kind of awareness of news, like, you know, usually, I don't know, the only things that come to mind are kind of crisis situations. Like the tornado or the bombings in Boston, there's kind of a disdain for national level news. But then when you look, if you can find a stream of kind of the local news, that tends to be a lot better. And I feel like there is a place for small locally created content, but how do they pay the bills?
You know, yep. I think they'll have to do some sort of online advertising, you know, or just advertising within their shows. Because I totally agree with you 100%. And in fact, with the tornadoes, with the more tornado, I'm slowly turning into a huge weather geek because we get tons of interesting weather in Colorado, and I've become like incredibly fascinated with that. So the tornadoes, I was like all over, especially because I was at work and I didn't have a lot of other stuff to do. And they were all watching all of the coverage on Fox News, which is awesome.
And do I detect a hint of sarcasm in your voice?
Well, it was just astounding, you know, at some point, and I think they ended up, from the Moore tornado, they ended up something somewhere around 20 dead, and all of the news sources were reporting over 50, you know, for a long time. And I know that there was a miscount with the medical examiner, and they had released official numbers that were like that. But when I got tired enough of the of Fox News, I went online and through Reddit found the local news channel that was streaming all of their tornado coverage, and it was so much better. They weren't reporting any hard numbers of anyone dead, and they had like really good meteorology, and they had interesting people who knew about, you know, the area, and it was just, I mean, it was like night and day, really, versus seeing whoever the, you know, I think it was probably Hannity at one point, because it was during his talk show that they were still having news coverage, you know, report the same 8 facts that are all retracted later.
And find a way to blame Obama for the weather.
Yes. You know, so local news is definitely a thing. And I watch, especially because of how unpredictable the weather in Colorado is, I watch probably two different. I watch ABC and NBC, the local affiliates here. I watch both of the meteorology on a very regular basis, just because they get it a lot more right than anybody else, and it's interesting. So, and we do get over-the-air TV. We cut cable this year completely, and I don't really miss it all that much. But I do like having access to the local channels. And then I've also discovered a whole bunch of PBS shows I never knew existed, which are hilarious, by the way.
I kind of like this hyper-local, like kind of having that separation, kind of having a hyper-local kind of thing, but then have access to pretty much everything else through some other means. I think the one-size-fits-all approach of cable is probably on its way out because of that. So that's cool. I like that.
Oh, yeah, specialization. Yeah. That's always the focus of the podcast.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's neat about the way kind of media goes and the way kinds of those things go is there is that not I mean that specialization really bleeds over into other things about like how we kind of keep our own information, right? Like mail, like Gmail, for example. Like a lot of people have Gmail accounts or other kind of actually does anyone not have a Gmail account?
You mean an NSA data collector terminal?
My mom still uses Hotmail.
Yeah.
It doesn't even exist anymore. They got rid of it.
I think it's called
it's Outlook.
You're right. It's outlook.com now or something. But yeah, that's so funny. But yeah, that kind of specialization and kind of focusing of information is really something that that's, I mean, it's definitely come up lately, right? The whole Edward Snowden whistleblower thing about the essentially warrantless information logging. And that was kind of an interesting kind of bit. I think the most interesting bit that I found for it was it was an article from The Atlantic that was about should the government know more than Google? And it's saying that that's really the central kind of thing. You know, should the government know information that Google, you know, has been able to get pretty much since it started having mail, right? I mean, Google's kind of ad engine crawls everybody's mail for keywords and then targets ads based on Gmail. And so, you know, that the government is now, you know, reaching in to see kinds of stuff like that. Is that good or bad or what?
Well, I would say the difference is that you signed up for Google and you have a terms of service that if, whether you read it or not, it's in there. and that's not in the Constitution.
Oh, I'm so anti terms of service. I don't even know where to start.
I agree, but still.
Well, so I think the question is actually a false question, right? It says, should the government know more than Google? And I don't think that the government. I don't think the government necessarily should know more than Google, but I don't think Google should know as much as it knows.
Agreed.
I mean the thing with Google is that it's a it seems to be a public service, right? Everyone should have an email account. It almost seems like that should be a right. But it's not, right? It's a private service. And so it's kind of a semi-public thing that's not. And that kind of bit of it is the thing that I think is starting, people are starting to catch on to that. But the focus is much more on the government's kind of ability to kind of look at it.
Right. And that's kind of, I mean, I think so many people are still in the somewhat cloud of oblivion that they live in, that they do think that things like Google and Facebook and Twitter, even to a certain extent, are public services. Like, these companies are just in it, like, for everybody's benefit. And if you really think about it or look into it at all, what you really know is that if it's free, you're paying for it with your personal information. And it's been that way from the start. I mean, they have a vested interest in trying to figure out how to make money off of you. And the more data they can get off of everybody, the more money they can make off of, you know, super personalization in these insane niche markets, which, by the way, Gmail often gets very wrong, which is hilarious. But I don't know. I think that the government, in theory, probably should know more than Google, but the way that that is in practice currently is wrong.
Yeah, I think
at the very least.
I think they should have the ability to know more than Google, you know, given proper warrants and stuff.
Exactly. Yes, like due process and all that kind of thing.
Because it'd be one thing if the government had a squeaky clean record throughout the history of our country of, you know, oh, we're always doing what's best for the people. But, you know, just because we have a power to do something, you know, doesn't mean we're going to use it. But you look at what happened to the Japanese in the 1940s in America, and that, you know, that's not, people say, oh, that'll never happen. Well, stuff like that did happen already before they had the ability to track down to, you know, the person.
Right.
Right. And I mean, even if you look at interviews I've heard from people who have actually gotten released from Guantanamo Bay who ended up there as purely a CIA mix-up. And that's bullshit. Yeah, yeah.
Like, seriously, not a thing.
Yes. But like, so it's interesting. I heard on Sunday morning on NPR, Rachel Martin was interviewing some guy who was involved with the whole NSA data mining thing back when Bush was in office. And he was saying that the reason they have to do what they do now is because terrorism now is much more focused on going after the lone wolf. You know, that these big supercells of terrorism don't really exist the way that they used to, and more it's just like small factions who develop extremist identities and things. And he was saying that to try and make people feel less nervous about it, but that actually made me feel a lot more nervous about it, because it seems like if you're targeting cells, there's a lot less chance I might wind up, you know, because I don't have associations. But if you're looking for lone wolves, like... That could be anyone, right?
Right. False positives are... The idea of false positives is a lot higher if you're just kind of correlating data versus if you're looking for something that has an actual, like, terror signature, is a little more clear. And that's another article that I'd found about, just from a statistical point of view, right? I mean, and it seems cold to think of it this way, but it was another interesting article where they said, you know, the number of people that were killed by, you know, by actual terrorist events, that you could say that their death was linked to that, you know, over the last 15 years is really low when compared to, say, food poisoning. Or something. Yeah. Right? There's just a lot more things that are statistically more significant. But if you ask someone, are you scared of food poisoning versus are you scared of terrorism? And people are going to pick terrorism every time.
Yeah, I agree. And that's actually a question that, you know, kind of has gone through my head in the past week about this, is that, I mean, it's almost worth, and I think it's definitely a question not a lot of people are willing to ask or even willing to think about, but I think it's worth pondering, is the statistical result of terrorism is so low that are we willing to sacrifice our privacy to make that number even lower?
Right.
You know, like, it's almost like, you know, I occasionally eat Caesar salad dressing, knowing that it has uncooked eggs in it, you know?
I'll say I'm much more worried about food poisoning than I am about terrorism. I'm constantly vigilant about what food goes inside my mouth and where that food has been and how it has been handled, having worked in the food service industry. Then I'm much more vigilant about that than, you know, if I go to an airport or a big event. I'm not worried about a terrorist attack.
I agree.
Because if something does happen, what it's like getting struck by lightning. What are you going to do? Nothing. It's what's happening is happening.
And both are somewhat, you know, preventable to a certain extent.
Right. I think that is a really good point. It really hits to the heart of like what it comes down to. So I've got my eye on the people that have got my eye on me. So we'll see.
between the war on terror and the war on drugs, the amount of money that we're losing and the amount of privacy that we're losing is staggering for the result that you gain from it.
Yes, I agree completely.
Oh, do we have any other, light topics to talk about while we're at it?
So Claire, as a paramedic, what would be a crazy situation that you've encountered if you're in the line of duty?
In a
light, funny way, not in a, and then this horrible thing happened and they died.
Oh, actually, I have a round of questions that I'd love to ask that are in this kind of vein. Because when I talked to you last about when you were driving like the ambulance and stuff, you mentioned that you would shame people from the ambulance, and I'd love to hear a story about that.
Oh yes, I love shaming people from the ambulance. It's a very wonderful and powerful thing to give someone a vehicle that has a loudspeaker in it. Because, you know, a good portion of what I do during the day is driving around, and percentage-wise, very few of that has a lot of purpose. And, you know, we go and get lunch or we're returning from the hospital or, you know, all of these other things we do. And so we see a lot of really terrible drivers and a lot of really terrible driving techniques and some very, very shamefully bad habits, like having one person in the carpool lane. And so having a loudspeaker available occasionally, I will pick up the loudspeaker and announce to everyone that they are illegally using the carpool lane. Or I love to do it with litterers if they throw a bag of McDonald's out the window. I have no qualms about getting on a loudspeaker and announcing that they're killing the planet one McDonald's bag at a time. I don't know if the ethics on that are totally in line, but it's fun.
My official ruling is it's a thing.
Yeah, I will agree 100%.
Keep doing that.
Excellent. One thing I know that we're all familiar with is coffee drinking. I think Brendan, have you become a regular coffee drinker with your new
pretty game? Much. I kind of swing in and out of it. Like I'll have some weeks where it does just the right thing for me and I feel great, and then some weeks I'll just react totally differently and just get all jittery and not happy.
So
it's a complicated dance.
So an interesting thing this week in the news is, I guess, coffee withdrawal is part of the new DSM-5, the Psychological Diagnostics and Statistical Manual. I think that's what DSM stands for. And so the fifth edition, which was it's either recently published or just about to be published. And apparently caffeine withdrawal is now essentially a psychological condition.
That's the wussification of America right there. Really?
Well, yes. The rationale is that it does cause physiological changes and psychological changes in your body. I mean, just it's a stimulant, and being off of it kind of changes your body chemistry. It literally does. So I guess it, and it's also common enough that putting it into the DSM-5 was a good idea. I mean, I think it's interesting that it can be that flexible that you can say that that's there. I wouldn't think that you'd really need to diagnose that and then necessarily treat it, but it is interesting that it's in the book.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, from the too much caffeine perspective, that's something that, you know, I think about all the time, because way too much caffeine can make your heart beat very erratically and very quickly, and can be a very simple solution to what someone might be thinking they're having as a heart attack or, you know, on the other thing. But the DSM is more for like psychological profiles, and I find that as an interesting, like caffeine withdrawal as a, I mean, sure, people get headaches and things, but you don't really think of it as something that really needs to be established as a succinct diagnosis on of its own.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna have a support group for like caffeine withdrawal people. Caffeinators Anonymous.
The line for coffee there is really, really long.
No, instead of having coffee and crummy cookies, they just have weed.
Maybe that'll be the treatment, right? Like right. Treat your uppers with your downers.
Exactly. Go ahead. That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yes.
That's just good science.
I don't know. What do you suggest? That suggested treatment is for that, like switch. Well, like you.
Yeah, I guess just have a cup of coffee. I don't.
drink less, do less of your drug. I mean, that's kind of the thing with all drugs, right?
Yeah.
Look, if you're doing too much, you should maybe think about doing less.
Well,
but don't go cold turkey.
Right. One of my coworkers was saying because he cut caffeine. He and I actually did this. We both cut caffeine for a month, and afterwards we had talked about it. This was a while ago, but his reaction was that he got just crazy headaches all the time, and I didn't. And when we were talking about it, his thought was that he would just drink coffee when he was thirsty. And when he cut coffee out, he also cut a lot of water out. You know, he wouldn't drink more water. So he would drink less kind of over the course of the day as a volume thing. So I'm wondering if he just wasn't dehydrated.
Probably a combination of both, because lack of caffeine can definitely cause a headache. It's got a whole vasoconstricting, vasodilating thing, which if I thought about it, I could probably get more precise for you, but I'm not there tonight. So that in itself can, you know, have an actual headache problem. And in fact, a lot of migraine remedies include some amount of caffeine, and you know, Excedrin has caffeine in it, and most of the over-the-counter migraine formulas do, because they have found that to be an effective anti-headache medication all on its own. But the water thing is huge. it's like, you know, 60% of your body is water. You kind of cut back on that, it kind of starts protesting pretty quickly on you. So I don't know, it's probably a combination of both, to tell you the truth. And Alan, you are so caffeine insensitive, it's ridiculous. So I'm not surprised at all.
I'm having a cup of coffee right now.
It's 9:17 at night. What is wrong with you? This is why you don't sleep.
Well, yes. You know, you gotta be awake to catch all the important news for the podcast, right?
No, yes. I guess that makes sense.
Because the middle of the night news is really excellent news. I just have to let you know.
The internet is for night owls.
There's going to be a lot of Reddit tonight, let me tell you.
It's interesting that if you drink a lot of caffeine or any other sort of upper like that, and then you stop having it, you get headaches and it's not good. But if it's something like a downer like marijuana, if you stop doing it, you just get more productive. It's like, that's the downside. I'm less sleepy.
Well, you know, it's a balance. It's a dance, like you were saying.
It is a dance. It's a waltz. I like to think of it as a waltz.
Really, it's in three. It's not kind of, you know, in an even number, because it's kind of an up and a down.
No, it's irregular, like your heartbeat.
Cool. Well, it has been roughly enough time for a regular set of the podcast. I'm very pleased with this show. I don't know about you.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It has been a fun time.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Glad you were able to make it.
Yeah, you're so much cooler than Ted. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Oh, I didn't say anything. This is me throwing Alan under the bus.
Ted, if you're listening out there, we did want you on the podcast. So when you can, let us know and we'll have you on.
And we'll have to have you back on again.
Yeah, yes. We're excited.
I feel like we've only scratched the surface.
Yeah, I know we spent way too much time talking about e-cigarettes and privacy issues. So But thanks for coming on. It's been a real fun time.
Yeah, great. Thanks you guys again for having me, and I look forward to coming back.
Yay. Brendan, anything else? Any parting thoughts? Any stuff we should know for next week?
All I'll say is this. I think I'm going to be finally turning to the dark side and buying a PlayStation 4, because Xbox can suck it. And also, I want to give a shout-out to Lil Skrill, MC Kalashnikov, for collaborating with me on our new song, My Hero. Sandwich.
Oh, we'll definitely be linking that.
Link to SoundCloud on that one.
Cool. That's a good a place as any to stop. Yeah. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.